Next case is 97-2273, Cleveland Power Association versus Dale Belock.
Now, the answers to the questions that the renter shows that she doesn't know what the hell is in her
judge.
You couldn't go get other work? I mean, this is not a great explanation to say, well, I Once a client's check came to me, that's what I lived on?
I'm not saying at this time that is a proper explanation, that's the right explanation. That is the explanation. Because if that did not occur until after the meeting occurred, I went to the FBI. As a matter of fact, the basis of the indictment that was brought against me was the information that I gave to the FBI. I went to the FBI on my own advice, the U.S. Attorney's Office, I was going to do that. I went to the FBI and explained to them the circumstances of what happened, the circumstances of the meeting, the circumstances of the individuals that I had represented, and the reason for why I got involved in the activities that I did, which violated the particular federal statutes that I did. Unfortunately, and I guess it was the reality of the situation, the FBI basically told me that it was a matter of the local police. I told the FBI that I can go to the local police because the local police department in the Youngstown, Ohio area was a relative of the, in fact, son-in-law of the individual that precipitated the meeting. So I was placed in that situation, and that's why the circumstances happened as they did. I was sentenced to 16 months in federal prison.
For mail fraud. What was the underlying facts of the mail fraud?
The mail fraud was the fact that the checks had been sent through the mail. That was the basis.
The checks for your clients that you cashed without their authorization.
Well, no, I did cash them with their authorization, but I did not give the funds to them as soon as I should give them the funds. I felt that at a subsequent date, I would be able to return those funds to the client. Those funds did come to me, and they did deposit those funds in my account.
So if you're settling a personal injury case and the insurance carrier sends you a check through the mail with the release, and for some reason that check is converted by the attorney is also prosecuted for mail fraud?
Yes.
Have you ever seen that before?
I've seen numerous cases of it, yes.
But the attorney's been... No, I'm talking about the specific example I've given you and involving in disciplinary matters of the attorneys converting funds of clients. Have you ever seen that as a federal charge?
Yes. If an attorney has converted funds that have gone through the U.S. mail, you're subject to mail fraud, yes.
I wanted to ask you if you were subject to it. Have you ever seen a prosecution under the mail fraud for converting a client's check that came through the mail?
Absolutely. Including my specific.
I know your case. That's one.
Okay.
You ever seen that?
Any of these clients been repaid?
Oh, yes. Clients have received restitution.
All of it?
Yes. Yes, that was, the restitution was also part.
It's ordered, but I'm questioning whether it's been paid.
Yes, it has been paid.
What, do we have some record of that?
The initial payment was made through the client's relief fund.
Mm-hmm. Client security fund?
Client security fund from the state of Ohio.
It's been paid by our fund,
yes,
through this court.
But then you reimburse the fund,
and
you're saying?
I am reimbursing the fund as part of my sentence.
You're reimbursing. Is it all been reimbursed?
It's not all been reimbursed, yes. No.
So when
I began my reimbursement from the time I went to prison and currently.
How much? How much have you repaid, do you know?
I don't know. Part of the reason I don't know is the payments were made while I was in prison. And the...
When I asked you that question, counsel, I asked you if you had paid restitution. You said yes. I don't know. That's a pretty close call, isn't it?
Yes.
Didn't you?
Clients have been paid through the...
Did you want to lead me to believe that you had paid them?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
And I was...
That was the impression I had.
I apologize for giving that impression. So I was trying to say, I make restitution payments through the U.S. District Court for Sedney versus Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
Payments began with reimbursements and fund began, actually, from the town of prison. But I don't know offhand how much has been reimbursed, but it's part of my steps to make a reimbursement. And as a matter of fact, the state has received maximum sentence of 16 months under the federal statute of sentence. And I am also presently on the term of 3 years supervised release through the U.S. Department of Probation.
What about the mafia? Are they still interested in you?
What I understand, yes. And particular individuals are involved from Youngstown. A number of them, I thought I'd also, prior to my incarceration, during my incarceration, since a number of them moved out to Las Vegas here, at the main location. Now, where I know, before, so that's another turn on there, where I live. So,
Do you have an office? You're still under interim suspension?
Yes, I am. I'm still suspended. And as now I'm in my life, now it's a carpenter. I'm still a law school carpenter. My position all along was there, and I understand the seriousness of it. I understand the fact that once an attorney commits a felony, specifically the type of felony that I plead guilty to, and that I acknowledge, that this court has inserted in a number of circumstances, as far as position of the Bar Association is the same all along. When the initial complaint was filed, and I filed my written responses, initially the hearing was set up for the hearing panel. I was still going to be in prison. I was not going to be able to even attend the hearing. Much agreed, I wrote, I was finally able to have the hearing put off until I got out from Morgantown and was able to present my case. My position all along has been that I should be punished, I have been punished, and I'm continuing to be punished. I feel that under the specific circumstances of my case, however, and that's my plea for mitigation, that under these circumstances, although my funds were converted, I feel that I have been severely punished for that. I lost my practice. My life as well as the life of my family has been basically destroyed. And I point out to the hearing panel, as well as in the brief that I submitted, that this court has granted mitigation in suspension as opposed to debarment. As the hearing panel in this case and the board of this court agreed to of a suspension. And I know that the case of Paris County Bar versus Keeler, as well as the Anti Bar Association versus Sider, those situations, this court permitted suspension because of the circumstances involved in this case. Those particular cases, their attorneys involved had alcohol and or drug problems, demonstrates the court that the rehabilitation had taken place. And it's my point to this court that under the unusual circumstances that I was faced with that aberrant behavior, that I too seek that type of mitigation, taking into account my rehabilitation, the punishment that I have received, and providing him the opportunity for me to have a
criminal. Where was it on your desk? He was here. Thank you. Just sitting right here. Does this make any sense to you?
Good morning. May I please report? My name is Wayne Stone, and I'm one of the attorneys representing the Zager, the Freedom Bar Association, just got before the court this morning.
Does not.
Pursuant to the Supreme Court rules of the government of the Bar of the State of Ohio, the Freedom Bar Association allows six common plan to be locked.
Yes.
Pleasure six copies of misconduct.
Yeah, okay.
Before the hearing panel, the respondent submitted to three copies of misconduct, and the hearing panel found him to commit a fourth act of misconduct. The board recommended that the respondent be suspended from the practice of law. The Bar Association rejected their recommendation, feeling that the misconduct was so egregious as to merit the respondent's disbarment.
Was the respondent's explanation of his fear for his life, was that news to you? Your brief, or the brief in the board opinion, seems to indicate they didn't know what this fear was or what the reason for it was. Is that in the record, his explanation of the mafia and the mob and the beating of his wife and him?
It was testified to that here in Iran previous to that. Because it was unknown whether the respondent would be available to testify at the hearing, the Board of Commissioners and Grievances scheduled his deposition at the Federal Prison Facility in Morgantown. I put out Morgantown and proposed to meet at that time. I was aware of his allegations that his life was in danger. At the hearing, that is in the record, the respondent testified to that. He did have some corroborating evidence from his father who testified that at some time. That he was living at his father's house at the time.
Okay, well that helps. I had a distinct impression that nobody knew about this. I mean, it was stated, and so the reason is that you didn't know about it when you wrote the brief, or?
At the time the complaint was filed, we did not know about it, and we did not know about it until the deposition of Morgantown, which was about a month ago.
Well, but the relator's, this response is filed December 17th.
Yes, at that time we did know about it.
You did know about it. Okay, the respondent never offered an explanation as to why he needed to steal and convert client funds because his life was in danger. So I guess you're saying that you didn't know why somebody had to steal because of life. Not that he didn't explain
the
point, how his life
was. The point I made in that section of the brief was the point that Justice Grant made, is that we were aware of the life threatening circumstances, but at no time in the hearing or in his deposition did he explain why he felt he had to steal because of his life threatening circumstances. And his answer was the first time that he had admitted that it was because he was no longer practicing law, he wasn't making any more.
The counsel, would you agree this court has both disbarred and given indefinite suspensions when you get similar fact pattern to what you have here. In terms of the offense itself, taking money from.
Yes, Your Honor, I would admit that there have been cases where attorneys have misappropriated client funds, and this court has ordered an indefinite suspension. However, in those cases, I believe the suspension was reduced, if I may use that term, to an indefinite suspension rather than disbarment because of some serious mitigating circumstances. In the case cited by the respondent, this court found that it was either an alcohol or physiological or physical disorder which caused misconduct, and therefore the attorney was suspended as opposed to disbarment.
Obviously, there were cases before I arrived here, and the ones that I can recall, it seems to me, this unfortunately isn't as uncommon as would like it to be, that is taking clients' money and converting them to your own use. It seems to me that sometimes we are going the other way as well. The board has recommended the indefinite, we've jumped it up. Sometimes we jump down, as you described it, although I think maybe less often, the board's recommending disbarment. I don't recall personally where we've done it. If your board recommends disbarment, and the report seems to indicate that they found this gentleman had been an excellent practitioner until this conduct. I gather from what I'm reading that he was perhaps well above average in terms of his skills. Is that not something that we should consider? Should we only say we're indefinite in this kind of fact pattern where alcohol, drugs, or some sort of dependency are the offered reasons?
My answer would be yes, Your Honor. I think that this court, if they're going to indefinitely suspend as opposed to disbar, should see in litigation a direct reason why this conduct took place, and that if you're in the court's mind, is a valid reason.
Okay, well, I guess I'm just one, but in my mind, occasionally I see patterns. And maybe those people even come in and represent themselves pro se, as we have here. Occasionally I see people that I wonder how they ever get their license to practice in the first place, and why would we ever want to hold out the hope of bringing them back, because they just don't appear to have good skills. So there isn't any reason to offer up hope, but should that be one of the criteria? If someone had good skills as a lawyer, is a reason to at least leave that potential window of opportunity open?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think a person's history and Mr. Belock's history was just based on his testimony. There's no extrinsic evidence as to his skills as a practitioner, so the only evidence we have is just where that he was. However, I think the misconduct that this court has to look at, the misconduct...
No, there is more evidence. I thought I read the report that the panel was impressed with this.
You did.
However, I don't believe that should merit... I don't believe that should be considered, because we're looking at the misconduct and whether the public interest would be served by the disbarment or the indefinite suspension of Mr. Belock. The Bar Association position on the public interest is best served by his disbarment.
The mail charges, likely the mail charges came out of the actual, what he said, the mail charges.
Yes, the mail fraud arose out of the Aronson and Maynard grievances, where the checks, the insurance checks passed through the mail. However, to pick up.
Did the federal charges arise out of the bar taking the federal court, or out of his other contact with
the court? It was my understanding that the federal charges arose out of a local criminal matter. To begin with, Mr. Belock was arrested. He was found to have some false documents on his person. And that since they were so involved with Burma, I believe it was a passport, the federal agencies didn't come involved. At that point in their investigation, there were pending state and civil matters regarding the Maynard and Aronson matters. And then when the federal investigators did their investigation, they found out that mail fraud was involved, and the indictment came out for mail fraud.
Could you correlate the time of these charges?
Yes, I can, Your Honor. And I think it's important to note in the one act of misconduct, in Mildred Thompson case, where he represented Ms. Thompson in a personal injury matter, that he misappropriated her funds in 1990. Which is 3 full years before his alleged, not alleged, but that his testimony that his life became in danger. The misappropriation of the checks in Aronson and Maynard occurred in 1994, 1995, after which point he testified that he felt his life was in danger.
So we do have an instance that occurred before this.
Yes, Your Honor. And to pick up on Justice Douglas' previous question or respondent, I think it's a little more then the checks came through the mail, he misappropriated them, therefore it's mail fraud. The indictment, which is part of the record here, said the respondent engaged in a plan to deceive the respondents, and as part of that plan, used mail to deceive them.
It's but to get the checks.
The checks, I'm sorry. It wasn't all on the up and up, the checks came, and then he decided to cash them, and there's mail fraud. I think in the mail fraud, you have to, before you use the mail,
well, I could sit in my office and say I'm going to settle this case. I call the adjuster from State Farm. They say, okay, we'll cut the check and send you a release. You go through this. You know what I'm talking about. Comes through the mail, and I've already made up my mind that
I've got a rent payment due that week, so I'm going to use that check when it comes in. That's a plan to deceive and mail fraud.
Yes.
Have you ever seen anybody under these circumstances in disciplinary cases charged with mail fraud?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
The real issue for this court is, I don't think Mr. Bulak would even agree that without mitigation, the proper sanction is disbarment. We have the misappropriation of three clients on three separate occasions, a total of $45,000. This court has consistently held over the years that the appropriate sanction for misappropriation of client costs is disbarment. I think the issue for the court's consideration here is whether the mitigating circumstances that Mr. Bulak presented is enough to reduce the severity of the sanction for disbarment and indefinite suspension.
Well, we must assume then that the panel and the board saw something in mitigation to recommend indefinite suspension.
That would be the right assumption. And I believe it was. According to the board's recommendation, the skills that he demonstrated in the hearing and his testimony regarding the circumstances. However, I think if we look at the explanations in mitigation, I think they fall short of meriting and a reduction of the sanctions. Mr. Bulak seems to point out that rehabilitation is more important than that he should be rehabilitated as opposed to discipline and be allowed to practice again. However, in certain court cases, this court felt that even though the respondent has provided sufficient evidence of mitigation, they were still disbarred. Specifically the Catholic County Bar Association's Bernardi, which is the court disbarred attorney Bernardi for misappropriation of client funds, even though it was found that he had a psychiatric illness which caused his misconduct. And similarly, in the Austin Disciplinary Council versus Williams, this court disbarred attorney Williams, even though they had found him to be suffering economic hardship, which caused most misappropriation of funds, and even though he presented evidence of his good character. In that case, as well as this case, the panel had a recommended indefinite suspension, and then similar to this case, Mr. Bulak's evidence of good character was presented to the hearing panel, and he also said economic hardship. So the three instances of mitigation that Mr. Bulak was presenting this morning was also presented in that case, and this court still felt that they had to disbar Attorney Williams.
Do you know how much he owes the client's period from the company?
I do not know how much Mr. Bulak has paid back the client's security. Finally, I think the last part of the mitigation considers the remorsefulness of the respondent. In the hearing, he indicated that the only reason he pled guilty to the federal felony counts was to save his wife from the cost of a codependent criminal trial from additional jail time. Similarly, again, this morning he said that his mind clients have received restitution. Well, that's not the part of Title II. They've been compensated for their loss, but Mr. Respondent has failed to pay out his own money, client security fund. The guiding principle of ensuring disciplinary proceedings in public interest, and we must keep in mind that matters not punishment is about protection of public interest. And in this matter, the respondent had admitted to, been found guilty of four acts of misconduct, but in violating 22 separate disciplinary rules over the course of 5 years, that his conduct merits disbarment, and the mitigation he has offered is insufficient to reduce that sanction to indefinite suspension. If there are no further questions, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Costello. Mr. Bulak, you've saved about a minute and a half of your time.
Thank you, relative to the Thompson matter that was brought up, that check occurred during that time period. When I was in hiding, the record would reflect that I notified the Bar Association that I'd like to have the mail, and then I asked for the time to respond. The findings of fact from the hearing panel know that the respondent mailed a check for signature. Mr. Thompson kept the check for approximately 1 year. Mr. Thompson turned the check later to want to check supposedly have you cash with the bank and look at either the original copy, either the original or the copy of the canceled check. All these things happen during that time period. Again, it shouldn't happen, it did happen. I reacted in part to save my life and also save the life of my wife. The mitigation of that I am seeking, I've recognized the wrong that I've done, I've been punished for the wrong that I've done through my incarceration in federal prison. As the hearing panel indicated, I had an unblemished record up to this point in time. Very importantly, during the deposition, videotape deposition at the prison at Morgantown, SCI, I put into the record excerpts from my federal PSI, my pre-sentence investigation, which verified my claims that I went to the FBI, probation officer, put that in the report, was verified that I hadn't been beaten, the hospital reports were verified, it was verified that I was in the Youngstown, Ohio area at that point in time. So all that stuff was made known at the initial opportunity that I was able to make known to the relator in this case and also to this honorable court. Again, I respectfully request that this court be given privilege.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised for opinions. Marshal, please adjourn court.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio.